the highest and greatest sages throughout the history of Kali Yuga have taught the same ultimate doctrine, but they have taught this usually only to their most advanced disciples who were already shifted from ego to soul consciousness. But toward the end of Kali Yuga, of course, it had to become public knowledge for the world as a final offering of truth to a world that had so fallen away from the real that the knowledge could no longer be transmitted in the traditional way and had to be disseminated via the morphogenic field and the information that could be published in books. And now another media. And that teaching we know as the Ajatavada, which Sri Ramana is perhaps the most recent expositor of and embodiment of. And to this level of consciousness, the supreme level of the spectrum of consciousness that is possible to us, there is no perception of subject or object. There is no conceptualization or symbolization of the real. There is direct realization, and that realization is there is no world, there is no cosmos. There is no multiplicity of different beings. All of that is part of an illusion. There aren't even different souls. There is only the one self. And what appears to those in ego consciousness is a kind of mirage or dream, partially self-created through the ego's projections and karma, partially through the soul's trajectory and teleological destiny. But none of that is real except as information. And at the level of the Supreme Consciousness, there is only light that carries information. Divine light. Light that emanates directly the energy of infinite love and carries that truth that can be partially translated into symbolic form, but only partially. And so to a sage at that level, nothing is ever happening. Because there is no world, there are no others, there is no I even, there is just that, there is just presence. Presence that understands everything, presence that's infinitely intelligence, presence that is the source of the information of the dream field, but that presence is presence to itself, not to any other. And so the illusion of some events happening in a world does not occur in that consciousness. Nothing changes. That level of consciousness is eternal. And the blissful luminosity does never dim or alter. However, for those who are at lower levels of the spectrum of consciousness, there is indeed a world. And at the ego level, that world is now in a very perilous state. And so part of the reason for this satsang this evening is that today, another leap in the acceleration of events, the escalation of the tension of conflict increased significantly when the German foreign minister declared that the entire West is in fact at war with Russia. And this is as close to a formal declaration of such as needs to be declared, at least from Russia's perspective, certainly. They of course, got the message about that some time back. But this was accompanied by the decision to send both Abrams tanks from the U.S. and Leopard tanks from Germany and other NATO countries that were using them. And the difference between these tanks and tanks already in Ukraine is that they use uranium-filled shell casings. And as you probably know, that's what the U.S. used in its invasion of Iraq. And it littered Iraq with radiation, making much of its environment unlivable. Russia does not want that to happen to what is its own territory or that of its neighbor, with good reason. And, of course, this constitutes a casus belli in the traditional sense, that it is an act of war regardless of whether there is a declaration. So we are now in a slightly changed game because the goal of the situation is out in the open for the public, not that the governments didn't know. But once the figureheads declare this, then it is much more difficult to be denied, even by the party line media. However, there was an immediate attempt to walk back the statement by other countries. However, those countries are vassal states like France, Croatia, others that have, of course, no independent say in the matter and are part of the Western attacking phalanx. Germany, of course, is occupied. It has been an occupied country since the end of World War II, and U.S. and NATO military bases fill that country, as well as others. So we're now in a situation where, given that the ultimate goal is the destruction of Russia by the West. Russia declared in response that all red lines have been crossed, and there is no reason for talking to the West any longer, and that they will take appropriate measures in response, are already doing so. There's a warship, a Russian warship, right off the coast of the U.S., practicing firing missiles today, and other military moves, and no doubt many things happening behind the scenes that will accelerate the situation, and there will now be a jockeying of position, final positioning, and each side knows that the advantage goes to the one who strikes first with a surprise attack. And because everything in this world operates at a fractal nature, what happens at that level out there will happen at this level here, which is perhaps one reason why we had our own shot across the bow today in the kitchen with a minor mishap, but one which I think should give pause to everyone about the possibilities of destruction in a very close at hand area that could disrupt our lives severely. And the fragility of our situation. But unexpected and surprise explosions, that means, will also happen at other levels. And for that and many other reasons, I think the timeline of the end of Kali Yuga has been revealed now as being very short. In addition, by the way, anyone who wants to eat a pizza in Europe should now know that they contained crushed insects in the pizza dough and in all the other dough and cereals being manufactured there, and that will no doubt spread into the U.S. and other countries. So our purchase of such products should now be made with extreme care. As I'm sure you understand the health risks of consuming such material. But these are, in a way, minor diversions, which I think now the World Economic Forum has become a sideshow, and even all of the mandates and all of that, just to keep people's attention from focusing on the primary danger. Two, at least, physical existence. And so I wanted to make it very clear to satyogis who are serious about attaining jivan mukti that because that effort, although theoretically effortless, for one still identified with body and with the ego, mental stream of consciousness, a great deal of effort is required to sustain the attunement to God consciousness sufficiently to eliminate the sanskaras of the ego, the traces of its delusional projections and its antagonisms and lack of love and lack of freedom, lack of free will, lack of capacity to stand alone without desire for enjoyments in the phenomenal plane and without attachments and codependencies, that level of consciousness will not prove to be sufficient to psychologically survive through the next phase that the world will have to go through as we are all tested in the approach to the omega point. And so I think yet another heads up is perhaps useful to those who are still not quite serious about the efforts that you're making, because they require us to be in unbroken attunement to the Supreme Self, not occasional or intermittent meditative efforts, but constant and sustained transcendence of the ego mind, with the heart open in unconditional love, which is quite a challenge for those in ego consciousness, as you know. And so these events, as they accelerate, they will humble us if we are not already humbled by the events that have already occurred and by our own recognition of the place of the human ego and the human species, for that matter, in the planetary ecosystem. In fact, the cosmic ecosystem. But the good news is that the self is merciful. And that grace is available, because grace is always being emanated by the self, to all nodes of consciousness that seek and are willing to surrender to the source of our being, so that there is no lack of possibility of self-liberation if there is a sufficient determination and motivation to be free of the chains of the ego, and not to buy into identification with its mental chatter and its emotional attitudes and projections. And if one has the courage and the wisdom to free oneself of those patterns of thought and affect and behavior, then liberation is indeed still a realistic alternative to suffering. And so the blissful self is always realizable for those who are willing to silence the mind by opening the heart in a state of devotion that is authentic and unending. and one pointed devotion only to the oneself, not to objects or beings in the illusory world. Because you cannot transcend that world, and it will not disappear so long as you are anchored to anyone in it, including your own body, what you think of as your own body. Because, of course, consciousness has no relation to bodies. There are no bodies. There are only light patterns that produce the illusion of form and movement and of physical existence. But as in a dream, no one is actually in the dream. They are just images. And if that is perceived directly, there will be freedom from the sense of being embedded in and as one of those images. And one will rediscover that one is only in the audience watching the film, but not in it. And that the watcher is the self, that ultimately at the highest level transcends even that level of duality, and all that had been a film is recognized as information that comes from a zero point of infinite intelligence and power. And all projections are withdrawn. And so this process of self-liberation must be the activity of the satyogi, which is a non-activity, while the body that's in the holographic dream field continues to function. And it will function flawlessly because it is an instrument of that supreme consciousness that is dreaming all of this. It's an illusion to believe you as an individual bodily being have any agency. You are not a doer. Everything happens. It happens according to karma. It happens according to the ordainer. It happens according to the unfoldment of the logic of the dream itself. But in fact, it does not truly unfold in time, because time itself is part of the illusion. And once outside of it, that too disappears. And all of that information of the entire chronos time cycle is understood as a single instant. A single thought in the mind of God. And it's this level of consciousness that very few are striving for in any serious way at all. But those who do will receive the grace that comes of the reciprocation of those efforts. And so this work should not be delayed or diverted from for any other intentions. even while the body-mind functions, doing all of its service, supporting the community within the dream field and acting frictionlessly with friendliness and cheerfulness, but without attachments, without collusions, without codependencies, without special relationships, without gossip, without secrets, without judgments and projections, but with cleanliness, spiritual shaucha, spiritual hygiene of not contaminating the morphogenic field of the community with any negative thoughts or vibrations. This is our responsibility to each other if we have any care for each other and for the upliftment of the community as a whole. And so I hope we are bound to that ethic and that level of consideration to practice such psychological hygiene. So that's basically the message that I wanted to share with you this evening and why I called this satsang at short notice. I hope it was worth your time. But in any case, I'll open the floor now if anyone has any comments or questions or doubts or anything you would like to discuss. We have the mic. Are we going to put that up or okay?
Back that happens from the ego when you start to like curb its jouissance and these kinds of things. And so I don't want to be scared of my own ego and what its response will be. I should or shouldn't?
Should.
I should.
It's your enemy. As long as there's still identification with it, let's put it that way.
Right.
That means that you are being hypnotized by it.
I guess my, the conclusion is devotion is important because if I know what I don't want and then the ego pushes back, you're faced with that choice of identifying with the irritable kind of response that it has, and if the focus is that instead of being entirely focused on striving for that ultimate self-liberation, then not that I want to be fearful, but it seems like I'll always get stuck in some kind of engagement with the pushback of the enemy, basically.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is what spiritual warfare is about. And the ego is programmed to defend itself against attempts to transcend it. In fact, attempts even of the soul to awaken to activate itself and realize that you are not the ego. And so it will take whatever measures it needs to from that subconscious sensor that is in fact the command and control center of the ego until you have taken over that that power center of the ego. It will be an enemy, a danger. Not to be afraid of it, of course, because as soon as you give way to fear, you are lost. Then it really has control. But like any spiritual warrior, you go fearlessly into battle, but with your eyes open and with your armor on, without chinks in that armor, and without any tendency to fall victim to the blandishments, the bribery or the intimidation of the ego. Mm-hmm. For some, it'll come as irritability. For others, it may come as depression or anxiety or some other means. Or it may come as a karmic intervention. Or it may the ego has many tricks. Mm-hmm. It can provoke things to happen that will naturally cause an emotional reaction, etc. So we always have to be on the lookout until the ego complex has been completely depotentiated and annihilated. There is always that possibility of being drawn back into it and pulled down from whatever level one has attained beyond it. So, however, once the soul is fully awakened, the Buddhi is awakened, and the Buddha nature, or the nature of the Holy Spirit, if you wish, the nature of God consciousness, the grace, the Shakti connection is strong enough, then there won't be a fallback, and the annihilation of the ego can take place because one will have extracted all identification from it, and it will just be seen for what it is, a set of algorithms and robotic programs. There's nobody there. There's no inner child. There's no, you know, even superego figures that you need to be attached to or loyal to. And all of its projections and narratives are false. And once that is very clear, then its entire programming will be wiped out. And so there's nothing really to be afraid of if one is determined and one is awake to the necessary level of consciousness, and one is, we could even say, ruthless in one's dedication to not paying attention to or entertaining the ego's thoughts and not believing any if they arise until they lose their power, because the soul has to breathe life into them by believing them and believing it's the ego's thoughts are its own thoughts. As soon as you know they're not your thoughts, and they are an imposter trying to usurp your brain and your consciousness, then you will not allow that to happen anymore. And then it can be very quickly eliminated.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Thank you. It's a very important question.
Namaste.
Namaste.
I feel like I learn continuously from experience and can understand conceptually that facing, let's say, unknowns are extremely helpful, right? They lead to growth, there's more expansion, all of these things, even known unknowns. But there is still such fear and anxiety that comes up with facing, with confronting, rather than embracing the unknown. Mm-hmm. I wish I had just that exhilaration to jump in there, but what would you, well, I don't know, I guess I'm asking you to speak to this.
Yeah, of course. You see, what you're calling unknown is only unknown to the conscious mind of the ego because it's not allowed to know it. The sensor knows. The sensor knows that what it's making you afraid of is the real self. It's making you afraid of realizing that the ego is a fake and doesn't really exist, and that you are not who you think you are, right? But this is the hero's journey. This is the high adventure. What would be an adventure of going to something that's already known, right? That there's no adventure in that, you know. Going to Disneyland is not an adventure, you know. But if you go out literally, you know, on the high seas or to a strange land and you make it alone and deal with whatever arises, you learn to become master of the situation, and you learn that you have to call on resources beyond the reach of the ego. And this is where the mind and the heart surrender to the grace of God and to the wisdom that will be imparted to you if you are on that quest for truth and for the supreme realization. The grace will be given and you will be able to surmount all of the obstacles that will come in the way to test your character, your determination, your authenticity, your courage, your goodness, your generosity. All of your virtues will be tested, and when you pass those tests, then the doors open to the highest revelations and redemption of the soul to the pure spirit, and then freedom. So you have to have that spirit of adventure and the courage of the warrior to face the unknown. And with that intention, with God as your shield and your compass and your guide and attuned to the Tao, you will be able to enter the dragon's den and slay it and move up the mountain of God to the peak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's slay it some more. So on a walk this morning, I was being asking to receive insights as to what is the game that's going on in with the ego that is distracting me from that constant attention and attunement to God, and what's the narrative, right, back there that I may not yet be conscious of. And what came to me was the fear of vainglory.
Of?
Vainglory.
Vainglory, uh-huh.
Very interesting term that I learned when we read, you had us read a nun's book on Christian values and how to move, right?
Yes, all that. I remember that one.
It stayed with me because I'd never known that term before.
Mm.
And when it was written that, you know, that's that worst final devil that one has to face within oneself, that's always there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it in this process, in all these years of the effort that has come naturally to me, it wasn't even a conscious thing that I said, you know, but that I just knew in my heart, the more I came in touch with the teachings and felt them within, that this is what life was about, was to feel at peace with oneself. And I wasn't at peace with myself and was dirtying the world with that lack of peace. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was this, I felt a very, I don't know, natural direction that required effort, tremendous effort. Mm-hmm. But the direction seemed clear enough for the effort to kind of get united ever more along the way, to be taken from distracting efforts into this one ultimate effort, okay, of feeling cleansed and being able to live with myself. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when we came to this aspect of vainglory, I was fascinated by it at that time. And on this walk, it, you know, it came, this game between what I perceived was a game between the fear of falling into vainglory and self-doubt, right? So stay in self-doubt, right? Because falling into vainglory is even worse, okay? than doubting that, you know, Shiva is moving through you, or, you know, and you're being guided, because I understand that I am. And in my seva, in these last months, couple of months, I've been, I don't know, I feel the information coming through, you know, in those I'm working with that say, you know, it doesn't matter how many samadhis you've had, as long as you're going to fall back into duality, right, and into ego consciousness, you're dealing with those internal demons that are still there. So it's just this reflection of no intermediary, no imperience even is going to get this soul liberated. It has to be Sumerians. And then what came to me was this, aha, but it's all God's glory. Can you get that? Mm-hmm. Right? If it's all God's glory, what's the problem? You know, there's no vainglory. Okay? So this moving into what you keep reminding, okay, all of us, and I'm trying to maintain that remembrance. There's only the one self. Okay? That is God's glory everywhere and with everyone. That then erases all the other confusions and doubts and questions that were there before. But this effort that I find consciousness in to stay on the horse, you know, stay on that effortless being ridden, right, and being just being the rider and allowing the horse to ride, destiny is a constant reminder that I'm so grateful to God, to Sat Yoga teachings, to you as this voice piece. Mm-hmm. For the ordainer to keep this remembrance alive and this yearning to stay north, stay focused on this very simple, because before Bangalore, one of those value was simplicity, which was one of your very recent teachings. We have to become absolutely simple. And this simplicity in getting it, there's only God's glory. How much simpler can that be? Anyway, it was very relieving, and because of your instructions, needing to have that constant reminder also coming from within, because, you know, I can't keep asking you and sending you questions for you to keep reminding me and these teachings. This has to come from within as well, and there has to be this. So this is what I first want to express, this gratitude to the mercifulness of the Lord that isn't given up on this, you know, that dwarf under Shiva's foot. And that foot, you know, gets there. And how I felt so relieved from that very simple understanding from within that connected deeper and deeper to what you're teaching and what the heart knows is the truth, but keeps getting deviated and forgetting, that forgetfulness dwarf, right, that needs to keep getting stamped on by karma and these events. And so if you can keep guiding this dwarf in forgetfulness, okay, back into track in any way that you feel is accurate for this stage, I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll comment a little bit about your mention of the concept of vainglory, because it is a defense against self-doubt, against the ego's knowledge that it's clueless. And so to compensate and suppress the dread of knowing it doesn't know anything, it creates a master's discourse. And then believes it already knows everything, and this supports its narcissism and its acceptance of very limited event horizons and of being able to tune out and deny whatever is not within its comfort zone, etc. But this this capacity for vainglory that exists within the narcissistic ego is not sustainable. It will crash karmically and in terms of its inability to meet the challenges that life will present, that will cause it to be humbled. So everyone will break through the vainglory one way or another as a result of the simple unfoldment of real one. But the voluntary humbling of the arrogance of the ego through surrender to the higher intelligence and power of God will bring one into the soul level, which is naturally humble and in a state of love and of attuning to the wisdom of God. And once that level has been reached, the danger of vainglory is pretty much gone, but forgetfulness not. You see, that's still a more subtle obstacle, because thoughts can still arise that can take one's attention. And images that are not of a narrative of the ego, but are simply diversionary, often even meaningless kinds of imagery, but that can draw one into a dream or a reverie or in some state in which one goes into a trance of separation from that that connection, that then will have to be restored, and again it will produce glitches in the upward ascension of the consciousness that will produce a return to let's say ground level, or at least to a level in which renewed effort of a very intensive kind may be necessary. So this repetition of the need to start over or to reorient again after falling prey to some idea that takes one far afield from God consciousness is always a danger, because the information that's floating through the morphogenic field is of various sorts of misleading tendencies. And so that really has to be tuned out, and an attunement only to that highest signal that's coming from the source must be locked onto without deviation. And that's once that is attained, then there'll be no more setbacks. Mm.
Okay? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this teaching, Shunya. I have a question about this locking on to the higher source. Because, and it's kind of in relation to what Yogi Raj asked about devotion, where I feel that locking on can sometimes feel very young. and then what happens in the heart, it feels like, is a type of anxiety or a tension. And I believe you've mentioned before that this tension is the ego that's fighting back and that's resisting. Sometimes, and I also wonder, am I supposed to surrender that more so that the devotion can come through? Because otherwise it can feel like a very, young practice. And maybe that's what it should be. And maybe that's what should be felt. But I was wondering if you could perhaps share some more about this.
Yeah, it's neither yang nor yin. Once there is a locking on to the frequency of God, which you can only do if you are in an open-hearted state of love of God, and then you receive the love of God, and the current is connected. There's a circuit, and there's no longer a sense of separation. There's one spectrum of consciousness, and you and God are in a pillar of light that is a single whole. There's no longer any real differential, just simply a minor spectral sense of the circuit's two connecting points, but it is it becomes a whole. So that love will wipe away any dread or anxiety. You can't be in both states simultaneously. If the love is strong enough and the connection is based on truth, and one recognizes the lies of the ego that will try to convince you otherwise, or not to have a faith in this connection, or that it can't be sustained, but the power of that love will wash out these sorts of attempts of the ego to oppose it. Once the current is flowing, it's really only when you have allowed yourself to be diverted, then the ego can come back in and take away the desire to reconnect by giving you other desires. That take over and that you buy into. But once you can no longer be lulled or seduced by the ego's attempts to tell you that you have other needs and other kinds of urgent desires that are more important than God, then if you don't buy into that, you will you won't be really deviated by it.
Thank you. That's very useful. And also this point on the faith, that connection can be sustained, I think is very important. Because sometimes there is a sense of a connection, mm-hmm. but then that faith sure. is, doubts will come in.
Yeah, as long as the ego is still there, then the doubts will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And the antagonism to love, because it's threatened. The ego is threatened by your love. So it has to be done from the level in which you realize you are the soul, not the ego, that is simply an artificial intelligence, you could say, acquired and imposed indoctrination into certain loyalties and command systems from the family and the social order and perhaps the religion and the other sorts of authorities that the ego submitted to. And one has to be sovereign and not have any commands that one is subject to internally or externally, for that matter, in order. That's why anarchy is so important in this work of realizing that God transcends all human laws or ordinances or mandates, and truth and love are owed only to God.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you. I feel terrified, but I wanted to just share, I think maybe more than just a question. And I was sitting just a moment ago, I felt very compelled to share from my heart, and then I come up here and I feel very nervous. And I don't like that, what feels like a dissonance in fear. But I think the point that I want to share is you read from your book, the book that we're reading, Nobody, Son of Nobody, and one of the poems, I think Vajra brought it up, talked about a begging bowl and this metaphor of your mind is a begging bowl, yet you're completely full of yourself. It's full of itself and upside down. And that was a very impactful image and feeling and like realization of what the ego is. Because it's never felt love and it's just been running after love. But I feel like recently a moment of surrender allowed grace and feeling completely loved and feeling love. Anyway, in this meditation before class, I was going into it and felt for a moment, I think, feeling like a begging bowl right side up. But and how much focus it takes to feel that, like wanting to receive love, like wanting to feel loved rather than constantly the ego, right? But anyway.
Good. Keep the begging bowl right side up and be very humble and don't allow narratives even of anxiety and fear to arise And you must stop talking to yourself and instead listening to God.
Thank you.
Thank you for tonight. I've been meditating on the Shema and understanding, trying to understand the feeling state of it, loving God with all my heart, might, and soul. Mm-hmm. And I've come across this, what is God? And I feel like there's a blockage at some points to that I didn't think I had. Like, I felt like I had a connection. Mm-hmm. But then there's like this fear or this block to come, and wondering, I know there's no like image, it's more of a feeling state, but how to connect fully with with this power that is so imminent around.
Oh, well, that's easy, because you see the Shema reveals that. This is a Hebrew prayer. It's the beginning of the core Hebrew prayer of declaring one's love for God and with all one's heart, might, and soul. But in the Shema itself, the Shema Yisrael, Yehovah Adonai, Adonai Echad. The Jews don't pronounce the Yehovah, they use the word Adonai as a euphemism. But the word you will read is Yehovah, right?
Yahweh? Is that the same
That's
thing?
That's the name of God that God declared on the top of Mount Sinai to Moshe. That means I am. Right? That's it. I am that I am. And so who you are loving is your own deepest I. Right? It is the I of your real being, not the I of the ego, and not even the I of the soul, but the I am I of the real self, the supreme self. But it's still I. It's not different. And that I runs through to every level. And so you can connect with that supreme I am even at the ego level if you recognize that the source of what you mean when you use the term I is not the body, is not the mind, because the I witnesses all of that. And you take it far back to the source of what is signified by I, and you reach God. Mm. And then you reach God as one, right? Adonai Echad, mm-hmm. right? You reach non-duality. Mm. That's the meaning of Echad, oneness. There is no other, not just no other God, no other I am, no other consciousness. And so you reach non-duality instantly if you understand that one line of that prayer.
Mm. Well, thank you. So it's not kind of, it's not out there, it's more going within.
Of course, entirely. There is no out there.
Mm. Mm. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Last call.
Mm-hmm. I didn't send a reminder, so I'm a little apprehensive to ask. But
I know what's coming. Okay, Nirgunji. Sat Yoga is about to offer a retreat. And what's the title of this retreat?
From Chaos to Coherence.
Right. So this retreat is intended to prepare all seekers for what is coming on the earth plane of nuclear conflagration and every other element of a perfect storm of annihilation and ending of time by reaching a state of total spiritual coherence first. And this means total God consciousness, total awareness of the real that transcends the illusion of time and therefore of its end or a beginning or a middle or any sense of existence separate from God. This level of coherence will be necessary. And it is not difficult to attain if one is determined to understand the logic and has the heart open sufficiently to offer and receive the infinite love of God, which will dissolve the ego illusion and any sense of peril or danger or suffering or pain or any embeddedness in the existential unfoldment of the holographic cinema in which you may currently believe you are situated, and the capacity to withdraw consciousness from that illusory dreamlike domain into the ultimate level of mind, of consciousness, of pure luminous presence in which nothing is happening. And then entering fully into the Godhead while the body is still alive and serving and acting as a beacon of light and love, transmitting that vibrational frequency to the world as our last service to all those who need to receive that transmission to rise also to that level of truth, coherence meaning truth, the ultimate truth of the omnipresence of God and the non-reality of the world. And that will be directly perceived by those who are in full surrender. Okay, so that's what the retreat content will be, with guided meditations and appropriate teachings. Does that answer your question? Okay, thank you. Okay then, since there are no more questions, we'll adjourn for the evening, and I hope you have a blissful evening in Mahasukha without any fear or worry about what is happening on this plane, but with the determination of a fearless spiritual warrior to realize the ultimate reality and live free and in total sovereignty and empowerment as a bodhisattva offering guidance for the liberation of all who still imagine that they are beings in a world, to realize we are all one in the one self. Namaste.